So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Gentlemen, it's that time again. Time to play the game. That's the game by Motorhead. Welcome to LouisvillePolitics.com's owner, MVM Media. I am Ed Springsteen, host of the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network, part of LouisvillePolitics.com. And I tell you, folks, we've always got something going on, something to talk about, something stupid that our politicians continue doing. And, you know, I don't think it's ever going to get any better. I really don't, which is good for me, I guess. I'm a guy that likes to talk, and you guys like to talk and listen. And, you know, so we're always going to have something to converse about. And I like that aspect of it, but I don't think anybody would be happier than me to see these idiots finally do their job as a way of shutting me up. Yeah, do your job right so you can shut us up and we can go on about our lives. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Ed Barton will be here shortly. He is working that job, you know, that business that Barack Obama built for him. He's working a little bit overtime tonight. Of course, he was out of town last week, and he's paying the price now, so he will be with us in a few minutes. In the meantime, you know, we've got a whole lot of things I've said to talk about. There was an announcement yesterday by UofL coach Charlie Strong, who has said that there will be no autograph signing at this year's annual Fan Day. He said he seems to think there's a national problem of autographs being peddled and sold by dealers on eBay and all these other places. So he told ESPN, I think the guy's name was Joe Tessitore, that in order for him to protect the players, he's just going to cut off the autograph signings on the annual Fan Day. I like Charlie Strong a great deal. I think he was a fantastic move to Louisville, and I think he's done a hell of a job with the Cardinal football team. With all that said, however, though, I have to disagree with Charlie Strong on this decision. You know, I was a season ticket holder for years and years at U of L. You know, I gave up those tickets a couple of years ago because, quite frankly, I just got to the point where I wasn't attending many games. I couldn't go out and attend a game with too many people out in the public paying attention to what I'm doing. And, you know, I couldn't really find the time. So I was spending money for tickets that I just wasn't using, so I finally got rid of them. But back in the days of Ron Cooper, you guys might remember Ron Cooper. You know, he lasted, what, a year, 2 years? He was here the first year the Papa John's opened. But one thing that's always set Louisville sports apart from a lot of other places around the country is the access and the rapport that they have between the players and the fans. It's one of those things, and I don't even know how to explain that to anybody who hasn't experienced it in a good way. But the fans have always felt like the players were basically part of their family. They were approachable. We could laugh, joke. We could talk together, everything else. And that has always been one of the things about Louisville sports that has always been what I believe to be a cut above the rest. So back in the days of Ron Cooper, my youngest son, you know, we had went to one of the football games like we always did, Papa John's, and we got there early as we always did, and we went down on the rails as we always did, watching the team warm up and things like that. And, you know, my son, my young son, was one of those kids. It was the very first game I had taken him to a U of L football game. And, you know, we're standing at the bottom of the rail right where the team goes in and out. They come back off the field after warm-ups and go out, you know, and walk around, do whatever they do, and then before they come back out for the grand opening or for the kickoff and all that stuff. But it was interesting because they were running to get off the field. You know, I yelled at Coach Cooper. I said, "Coach, have you got time for an autograph?" And he looked at me dead in the eye. He didn't stop. He was walking through. He looked dead in the eye and says, "I don't, but I'll be back in a few minutes, and I'll get one for you then." Well, knowing, as I know from other places, that wasn't going to happen. You know, so I told my son, I said, "Don't worry, he'll be back." I didn't want my son to be disappointed knowing that Cooper wasn't going to be back. And I took his hand, and we turned around to go back to our seats. And in less than 15 seconds, I don't think it was any longer than that, really, as soon as we had literally turned our back to walk back, I hear somebody yelling, "Hey, hey, hey." And I turned around, and it's Coach Cooper. And he says, "Give me that pennant for your son." He says, "I probably won't be able to get back later." He goes, "Let me sign that for him now." And, man, I tell you what, that made such an impression on my son. It was unbelievable. He's a lifelong U of L fan, will always be a lifelong U of L fan. But, you know, that meant something to him, and it meant something to me. Because the coach thought so much about my son. Now, he doesn't know my son. He'll probably never, ever remember that thing. And, of course, he's not in Louisville anymore anyway. He hasn't been for years. But that day showed me a difference that I never saw when I go to a UK game, that I never saw when I go to any other sports team game. That special relationship is important. So Charlie Strong, I hope you're listening to this, and I hope you understand it's those kind of relationships that the people in Louisville, the U of L fans, want to feel with their players, and I think that this decision is going to hurt that image and that approachability. You know, there's other ways to do things, but you don't take away the autograph signing on the annual fan day. You can't have an annual fan day without getting autographs, people from like Teddy Bridgewater and all the rest of these guys. So I understand you're trying to protect the program, but I understand the fans are the ones who fund every bit of this. You know, they're the ones who built that stadium. They're the ones who pay the contract. You know, it'd be nice to appreciate them at least one day. Don't take it away from the annual fan day. Okay, moving on. The news that everybody wants to talk about. As we told everybody on the air last night, JCPS was looking to raise taxes. 3.1% was what they were searching for. We knew that was a gimmick. Told everybody last night, get ready to wake up to new taxes this morning. You know, I expected them to try to get the full amount. I really did. But I think we just witnessed what's called the dog and pony show. Some people would call it bait and switch. And realistically, JCPS went in last night. They went into a packed standing room only meeting last night. That doesn't happen all the time, but it happens on important things. So these board members go in. They already have a backup plan. I believe that that's exactly what we were looking at. According to Robert Zeller, he was one of the people who was there in the audience last night. You know, he said they knew what they were going to do when they walked in and saw all the people in the audience. They had a backdoor plan, so if something got voted down, they were still going to vote something else in, and that is exactly what they did. They went in, asked for 3.1%, went through all the rigmarole of talking and all the other garbage. It got voted down on a 3-4 vote, and then our good friend, David Jones Jr., says, well, how about 1.4? Let's go with 1.4. And that thing was voted in faster than a damn pinfall in the WWE. I mean, it was that quick. So, you know, so they ended up with a 1.4% tax hike that's going to generate about $8 million a year, supposedly for the public school system. Now, we know, as we mentioned last night, went into great detail on, they've got a $1.2 billion budget. That's a billion with a B. They can't find $8 million? Are you kidding me? You're talking about less than 0.01%. That is the biggest farce and the biggest joke of anything I've ever seen to screw the people out of more money. This school board needs to be disbanded. We need Louisville to stand up, demand to put it on the ballot to eliminate the JCPS. Let the mayor and let the superintendent take over control of the public schools, and we've got those people accountable. We've got them accountable. But this JCPS board is ridiculous, period. And now I know a lot of people are going to say, well, three of them didn't vote it in, three of them voted against it. Well, yeah, but those same three people are part of the problem and have been for many years. And that includes Ms. Haddad. She has played this game for so many years that now she can go out and don't have to play the game anymore. So it's easy for her to vote against this without having to worry about too much backlash. But here's something, too, that most people haven't looked at. The reason they said that they needed this tax hike, it was all about replacing the federal and state money that they were going to lose. They're saying that they're going to lose $3.5 million in federal sequestration cutbacks this year, and they're going to lose $1.5 million from the state. Now, when we look at this, that adds up to $5 million. So if all they wanted to do was replace $5 million, and they know what they can come down on a tax hike to replace that and break even, it would be a hell of a lot easier to sell. Why didn't they go with a 1.2 or a 1.3% or go with a 1%? You see where I'm going with this. Because a 3.1% was going to generate $17 million. They could have went with a 1% raise and generated a little over $5 million that they needed. There's no way you're going to get $5 million exactly. But no, they had to go to 1.4 and add $3 million in additional new money. This was never about only replacing $5 million. This was about getting what they could get, and that's exactly what they did. You know, this is... This is yet another slap in the face to we, the taxpayers. You know, most of the people in the audience were against the tax. They applauded as soon as the 3.1% was voted down. Everybody was happy. They said, all right, we win. We got this victory. And then Mr. Jones Jr. decides to throw up this 1.4, and they voted on it before the audience had a chance to even knew what hit them. Before they even knew what hit them. There were so many people that walked out of there so angry, they couldn't even talk to the news. They were that angry. That is pathetic, folks. And that is what we need to start paying attention to, because this is what's going on. This is the reality of the liberals in every aspect we've got in this county. Now, I know people get sick of me saying liberals. I'm not just saying Democrats, folks. I'm saying liberals. There's a difference. There's conservative Democrats and there's liberal Republicans out there, believe it or not. But everybody wants to focus on a two-party system. I'm going to focus on the mindset. Now, it's not my fault that most Democrats are liberals, and those happen to be the ones in elected power, but it's a story for another day. But the liberals continue taking without giving anything back. And I'm trying to figure out how we can sustain this going forward and have any kind of a clue. By the way, the phone call-in numbers are 858-683-1326 or area code 502-805-0334. For you guys that are listening in the queue, don't forget to hit that number 1 on your dial pad, and we'll put you on the air just as soon as we can. I always forget to make that announcement, and I apologize. But we've got to do all of this stuff. And, you know, it's not the 1.4% that makes people angry, per se, with just the JCPS. We're angry about it. But when we couple that with all the other things, with MSD, they can take up to 7% without having to worry about getting approval. You know, we've talked ad nauseum about all of these things. We have to have some accountability, somebody that we can say, okay, this is wrong. You're not allowed to do it, so fix it. You can't do that with a JCPS board. You can't do that with MSD. And by the way, look for the merger of Louisville Water Company and MSD coming up. That was the whole project. That was the whole purpose of putting Heisman in charge of MSD when they moved out Bud Chardain, who landed on his feet with a very cushy job. But the idea is to merge these two, because the Louisville Water Company is actually not, you know, it's owned by Louisville. They own 100% of the stock. But it's not considered a government agency, so they're not required to have oversight. So they put MSD in there with some seed. Then you got two worms right there. So we had to start paying attention to this kind of stuff. Moving on, though, we got some great stuff. This story just popped right back up again today. The Federal Election Commission, the FEC, has posted the termination letter acknowledging that Progress Kentucky and their treasurer, Sean Riley, closed the PAC. So if nobody wants to remember about Progress Kentucky, Progress Kentucky was a PAC, if you will, that was put together by Sean Riley and his good buddy and fellow liberal, Kurt Morrison, illegally recorded a Mitch McConnell strategy session, turned it into Mother Jones, and that became a huge play all over the airwaves. Mitch McConnell said they were going to play whack-a-mole with Ashley Judd. Oh, my God. That's so bad. That's so sinful. Now, yeah, you know, you and I both know in the grand scheme of things that was nothing. That's just normal political campaign talk. But mainstream media went crazy on it, but they won't do anything about Greg Fisher and all the others, you know, John Yarmuth and all their problems. Well, anyway, they're officially dead now. The PAC was put together to try to take out Mitch McConnell. They raised about $17,000. But here's the thing. What's interesting to me about this, too, is that, you know, this is all about WFPL, by the way. They're the ones that actually recorded the original story that Mother Jones had it out and everything else. But what's really interesting to me is on the day that WFPL broke the story about Kurt Morrison and Sean Riley being there recording this thing illegally, Riley was paid by the PAC for consulting services to the tune of $3,000. Now, he'd been paid one time prior to that a few weeks earlier. He was paid $700. That's a hell of a raise that comes out. It just happens to coincide with the time a Mitch McConnell tape got made and released, doesn't it? Anybody don't think there's something funny about that? You really need to have your head examined. Welcome, Mr. Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen. Phew. Well, I got to be honest. We'll get into what you're talking about in a second, but I'm always leery when I have to work a little late and I call up and I'm thinking, oh, crap. what's he rolling on? I have absolutely no prompting. It's just like, okay, let's get on in the queue. Let's get this going and hope that he doesn't use the conspiracy word or something like that and get us. You know, get the black helicopters. We don't even use black helicopters anymore. Drones following us and stuff.
I'm going to go there anyway, you called in at the right time, because this was at the very beginning of me talking about this. You know, so they've dissolved the super PAC. We know Kurt Morrison made an illegal recording, and Sean Riley was with him. And all of a sudden Sean Riley gets paid $3,000 the very day that the recording gets released. You don't think that's coincidental?
Yeah. Well, I think what else is coincidental, and I know it's you got a love-hate relationship with Jake, but yeah, he was on them for their filings and stuff, and there was no money there for a long time, as I understand it. Then all of a sudden, there's money, and they're paying people, and it's like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they actually started the PAC in December of 2012. And the PAC, again, was set up to try to get rid of Mitch McConnell. But in February, 2 months later, they went after McConnell's wife and started playing a damn ethnicity war against his wife, Elaine Chao. Now, we tease all the time about Elaine Chao's parents being rich, so Mitch McConnell has the ultimate Chinese connection. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but we're not trying to disparage Elaine Chao's ethnicity. We're trying to disparage Mitch McConnell's access to funds. There's a big difference there.
Anyway,
they went after her and made some disparaging remarks that they should have been chastised for. And as soon as that went out and they got caught over those tweets, the donors started backing away. So in less than 2 months, they had collected about $17,000. And that was before the Elaine Chao. Basically, they didn't collect anything after that. People ran away from them in droves. But, it's interesting that Riley served as treasurer. Paid himself $700 for consulting services a few weeks prior to the recording going out. And on the day that the recording gets released, he pays himself $3,000 through the PAC. I want to see the contributors. And I think if we can get to those, I think everybody's going to be really shocked at who actually is involved here. And I know there was some cash that passed hands. I'm not at liberty to tell you how I know that because I cannot outsource this. So let me rephrase. Let's just put it this way. Rumor has it that cash passed hands. How's that? So I have no doubt about how he gets
$3,000, and then he immediately lawyers up and leaves Kurt Morrison a twist in the wind. So yeah.
Well, Kurt doesn't do himself any favors.
I can only guess where the $3,000 went that he paid himself.
Well, I bet you it didn't go on lawyer fees. I bet that was I would almost bet you that whoever his attorney is, because they don't have to divulge how they're paid or what they're paid, I would almost bet you that he's being represented basically free of charge. I would almost bet you that because they need to keep him quiet. And interesting you bring up Kurt Morrison. I brought up Kurt Morrison because Morrison, of course, ran to California with his tail between his legs, and he's still out there trying to act relevant and talk about Kentucky stuff. But he was contacted. You go to LiveWire. It's a talking points memo for this. But he was contacted for an interview. He's the one who supposedly recorded the Mitch McConnell session with Sean Riley standing right next to him. And he said that he thinks that Riley backed out or closed it because he just felt he was overwhelmed because the group was tied to the recording. But then it goes on. This is the funny thing about it. Then it goes on and says he has no firsthand information about the demise of Progress Kentucky, because he hasn't talked to Riley since the end of March, and he left pretty quickly. And he still maintains that he was a volunteer with the group with no pay and no authority, which I find amusing because, as soon as this went down and as soon as he found out the FBI was investigating and he had a lawyer up, he started this little donation page there. He was trying to get people to give him money for his so-called attorney fees. And then he just disappears to California. Morrison was broke, didn't have a dollar for gas. And all of a sudden he disappeared and got to California and taking all this legal fees.
Let's be clear. We know Kurt and we like Kurt. I've said, from the beginning, if he broke the law, he broke the law. But Kurt's a true believer. I won't take that away from him. I mean, he is a liberal's liberal, and he didn't do it for. I'm sure he didn't do it for profit. I'm sure he's in. It's for the cause, as they say in the Gone with the Wind, for the cause. But and then he goes bouncing from the West Coast to the Carolinas, then back to the West Coast, and. You're right. He was pleading poverty there for a while. My dog died. I'm living out of my car. Somebody please
right.
help me.
Right. And
now he seems to be doing quite all right.
Well, yeah, now he's enrolled in law school in California, but all the travel in between and living out of his car and didn't have money for gas. You know, so I, what I'm wondering now is, and you know, I do like Kurt on a personal level. I really do. I think he's too idealistic. I think he's too much of a dreamer, and eats that liberal crap up way too much. And I also think that what he did was crooked, and he should pay the price for it. That's just the reality of it. I'll tell Kurt that to his face, and he knows it. I've got no problem with that. But Kurt genuinely is a nice guy. Kurt really believes in what he's doing. So I'm like you. I don't want to take that away from him. But at the same time, you know, he's broke, living out of his car, can't afford gas to get from one block to the next, and all of a sudden he becomes this traveler, if you will, all over the U.S., West Coast, East Coast, and back again. He's got money in his pocket to do this. He's enrolled in law school. You know, where did the money go? The money that he took in on this donation page was supposed to go for legal expenses. But now I wonder if they did. You know, and if he didn't, then he just lied about that. And if he had an excess there, he should have been honest about it. You know, so I don't know. And maybe he was. Maybe he did put something out there that said, I'm going to use the rest for my living expenses and to live. Maybe he did. I don't know. You know, maybe I missed that. But, you know, I've got a lot of questions about that.
Somebody's taking care of him, you know, outside of the, somebody just says, hey, don't worry. I got you, you know.
Oh, that's it. That's it. And, you know, and he says that he was only ever a volunteer with the group. He had no pay and no authority. You guys can believe anything of that you want to. There's no doubt in my mind that he received no pay because there's nothing better that these hacks like to do than have somebody pledge their soul to you for free. And Kurt would do that because he believes when he believes in a cause, he's in it all the way. You know,
yeah.
But, you know, you got Jeff Noble involved, Sean Riley, Allison Lundgren Grimes. Yeah, I said it. There you go. All these people are close. All these people know everything. Allison Lundgren Grimes knows all about this. Rumor has it that she's the one that asked Riley and Morrison to put it out so that she could get Ashley Judd out of the way. That they're the reason they put it out was for Allison Lundgren Grimes and figured it was a double-edged sword. Get Ashley out of the way and nail Mitch McConnell at the same time. That's what I've been told. True or not, you make up your own mind. But, you know, it's realistically, I can believe a lot of that. But I just found it interesting that Progress Kentucky shuts down, and they're going all the way to California to talk to Kurt Morrison. And to be quite honest with you, I haven't even got an update on the case. I guess I need to do that because I just kind of let it last because all this other stuff I'm doing right now. But I think I'll update that case in the very near future. I'll check it out. in the meantime, man, we've got even more going on. It's so funny. You guys can go to the CJ for this one today. This one's hilarious. But Judge Martin McDonald, you guys remember him? Looks like Ed dropped, so I guess he probably hit a dead spot somewhere. He'll come back. But Judge Martin McDonald, senior judge, retired. Judge McDonald retired in June. Okay, welcome back, Ed.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you started mentioning Allison Lundgren Grimes, and my phone went to hit. I started looking up in the air like, oh, no.
That's the way it works,
no.
Man. That's the way
it
works.
I'm
you know?
About to be thrown.
You know how we roll around here, man. As soon as we get in something we're not supposed to, something happens. We lose communications. But anyway, Judge Martin McDonald, you guys might recall, he was a senior judge. He threatened to strangle a lawyer in court, you know, because he flat out told him that he was just, you know, sick of it. If you call my phone again, I'm going to strangle you. And I'm going to make sure you get disbarred. You know, well, the Judicial Conduct Commission, those guys I am always very critical of because I find them to be a joke because they don't do anything they're supposed to do, decided to go ahead and put out a report. You know, the commission said that they gave him a public recommend for violating the canons of ethics in two cases, including the one with the attorney just mentioned. And that in both cases, you know, Judge Martin McDonald, if he was still on the judiciary, would perhaps have been removed from the bench, you know. And I'm sitting here looking at this. This guy retired back in June. Why is the Judicial Conduct Commission coming out now acting like they were going to take him off the bench if he stayed on? You know, we've got all these other occurrences. The Katie King situation, they didn't do anything about. You know, the judge in the Chris Thieneman nuisance lawsuit, they didn't do anything about. You know, the Judicial Conduct Commission doesn't care about anything. But because McDonald is retired, they had nothing to lose by coming out acting like badasses. You know, these are little cowards as far as I'm concerned. And the Judicial Conduct Commission, to me, are the ones who are being reprehensible. Judge Martin McDonald, he don't repent anything. You know, he called the Judicial Conduct Commission clowns who can't figure out they don't have any authority over me because I'm retired and done. Why do we even put things out here from the JCC? And why, who cares?
Well, you know, like I say, I got to give him, hey, I marched for Canberra. He says, I'm retired. Who cares? Yeah, I mean, it reeks of just an easy target. You know, it's something, it was kind of high profile and definitely made you scratch your head when they played the court videos of what he said. I think it's just grandstanding. I mean, absolutely.
Well, that's exactly it. There's nothing they're ever going to do.
He obviously.
Okay, Ed. Ed, you're cutting in and out, man. For some reason, you went to cut in.
You got me now?
I got you now, my brother. Okay, that's better. But yeah, this is grandstanding. You're calling from the same spot you usually do, I know, so I don't understand it either. But, you know, I guess because now we're taking on the JCC because they're owned by the Democratic Party, too. Just ask Jack Conway and Hart McGibbon, who let Jim King get away with everything on behalf of his daughter, Katie King. And that's a long mess. I could fight for hours on that one. But here's the deal. I mean, it is pure grandstanding. And if they think this is helping their case, that they're actually doing something, you know, my BS meter just went into overdrive. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous what people think, and I can't believe they even put that story out. They should have just kept their mouth shut and let it go. But they go to the CJ, their good buddies over at the CJ, take care of all the libs, and they take care of it that way. I just found it interesting. I really did. Ed has dropped again. Now, moving on, we have other stories out there. We're going to get into some important stuff here in a minute, I think. But well, I'll tell you what, it's the bottom of the hour. Let's go ahead and take our half-hour break. And we'll get into some more of these stories when we get back, because we've got all kinds of stuff going on. There's some great things going on with some eminent domain cases around the country on behalf of cities, if you will. And I think we're thoroughly going to enjoy those. So sit tight. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters Radio Show. And on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Get over it.
Yes, we are back. Get home. I love it when you tell us that. Get home. But I tell you what, you know, when you have some things that we really need to get over, especially with these big banks, and we're going to get into that real quick. And I'll tell you why. It really brought me to look at, we have a story coming out, homeless camps. And Ed, you're familiar with those. We see them everywhere. But homeless camps are in the path of the downtown bridge construction, need to be moved because the workers are continually clearing the land for the new ramps. The Ohio River Bridges Project officials told the Jeffersonville-Clarksville Homeless Task Force last week that they needed to move the homeless camps out of the way because they're blocking their construction progress. Think about that. You got a homeless camp, and it needs to be moved. So instead of addressing the homeless, we're just going to move your camp to a different place. That kind of is pathetic to me, that you would even put something that way. You know, I've got some problems with that, but what it did do is it made me start looking at other things. We've got all of these properties. One of the problems with me is, and one of the biggest things I fight about all the time and try to make better, is all of this abandoned property, Ed, because we've got all of these big banks who own mortgages on abandoned property. They are responsible for the upkeep of these properties, and they let them sit and rot. They let them sit and rot. They don't take care of cutting
them. There's a double whammy because, A, they let them sit and rot. They don't maintain them. You know, they get gutted. They rot. Only for health codes do they maintain the height of the grass from time to time. But while the houses are rotten, they let them. The bank still claims them at full loan value on their books, so they can pad their books.
Exactly, and that's what I'm getting at. So the banks are getting all these tax benefits out of that without spending it down. They're not paying property taxes on it. They're not doing anything to keep the upkeep up. The city is paying city workers. Our tax money is cutting the grass when it gets cut because they can't keep up with all of it. You know, so we look at all of this stuff. Well, Richmond, California, last week became the first city to move forward on a plan that I think is pure genius. And what that plan is, they're going to these big bank lenders and trying to get them to sell the city their underwater mortgage loans at a discount. And that's if the owner will consent now. And if they don't, then they want to seize these homes through eminent domain. What this basically means is, if you have a property, let's say your property, you know, had a value of $100,000, but since the housing market crashed and everything else, that value is now $80,000, you know, or $70,000. The city is wanting to buy those properties up at the current values, you know, with the owner's permission, of course, you know, and they want those houses because what they want to do is they want to refinance those homes at lower interest rates and everything else to keep the homeowners in their homes, you know, and they want to put them in their homes at its current value, not what they owe. Now, the reason I like this is a lot of people are going to say, well, that's just wrong. The banks are losing money, blah, blah, blah. Well, what happens ultimately is these homes are going to be foreclosed on. The people are going to move out. They're going to sit vacant. The banks aren't losing anything because they're going to get all the tax write-offs and everything else for a while. But eventually their house is going to be raised, and it's all going to be written off the books as a loss. So if you're going to take the loss anyway, and this is where the kicker is, and this is why the big banks don't want to do it, because at a $100,000 mortgage – that's $100,000 that they get to write off as a loss against the house when they decide to foreclose on it and let the house sit for 10 years until it's so rotten it has to be raised. And then the city is going to be the ones taking care of cutting the grass all those years. They're not going to be able to do anything about the taxes that the bank will owe on it. And then when they raise the property, chances are the city are going to be the ones who raise the property. The bank's not going to pay a dime, and they're going to get all that benefit. So, you know, going to these banks and telling them sell it to us for its current value, or we're going to use eminent domain to take it to keep homeowners in there, seems like a great move, doesn't it, Ed?
Well, I have mixed feelings about when it comes to the city taking over and doing all the legal work and assuming a lot of the costs to essentially for the city to refinance for an individual. But you know, when it comes to the banks not taking care of the property, they condemn it. You know, and that's what they're doing too. And you can just condemn it and take it away, just like anything else. Like, look, you either do the proper upkeep according to the building codes, according to the, you know, all the tenants of the neighborhood, call the health coach, or they're going to start slamming you with liens, and eventually they're going to pile up enough liens and judgments against you that you're going to, they're going to move on the house to satisfy the liens. That's perfectly legal, and I wish they would do it more, but the bank's got a lot of leverage, and they, you know, they, if they don't want to be foreclosed on, they can fight them. They got lawyers, they got leverage with politicians, but no, absolutely. I mean, we were talking off the air. I drive past one. Actually, I drive past two houses that are absolute wrecks, and they're bank owned, you know, right on our street, and they're letting them go to hell. And while they're letting them go to hell, you know, one of the other big reasons they keep them on the books is because they have to keep a certain level of assets in order to be able to loan out a certain amount of money. So if they, you know, if they keep that house on the books at $100,000, then they can loan out, you know, if they're going 50 to 1, they can loan out $5 million using that house as collateral with somebody like the Federal Reserve. So that's another reason they don't like to just have it foreclosed and have somebody buy it off the auction block for for $5,000 and then raise it and basically pay for the lot value. That's about all you're going to get. There's a whole litany of reasons they don't want to do it. But you know, the fact of the matter is, Ed, if you or I, we let our house go to a certain point and we start getting fined and everything by the city, mm-hmm. we decide not to pay our taxes, they're mm-hmm. coming for our house.
Sure.
If you want it free and clear and you don't pay your taxes, they're going to take your damn house. And it just amazes me that these banks are playing the game they are, and that it amazes me that it's actually news that if a city moves on a house that's otherwise absolutely should be condemned, that's news. It's like, guys, go in and take them all. You know, if you got to level them, level them. You know what? If you want your AmeriCorps kids to come in and fix it up, and the city can either make it public housing or whatever, do something with them. But it just, like I say, if you or I do this, they're going to come. We skip taxes if you're coming after our asses. These
banks, there's no doubt about it. And that's the thing,
banks,
though.
These banks, it's going on 6 years or more, 7 years in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to do anything. I mean, one of these houses that drive past has been vacant for probably seven, eight years, and the bank, it's bank owned. Everybody knows it. Nothing happens to it. It's like,
and that's
why is this thing even standing? It's a health hazard. Burn it.
But see for me, and here's the thing, because you're actually making my case for me, I think, to some degree. And here's the thing, because every year these properties have taxes levied against them based on their assessed value. Now, the assessed value rarely, if ever, goes down on any property. So this house that 8 years ago was assessed at, let's say, $100,000, today, run down and everything else, the house that you're talking about probably isn't worth $5,000 or $10,000, the cost of the lot. But those taxes are still being charged to the mortgage company. So for me, I mean, the whole deal is this. I mean, the city, if I don't pay my taxes, every year the city sells off. Here in Louisville, I don't know how it works around the country, every city is different, but here in Louisville, your property taxes, if they don't get paid, those are sold off as a debt to some investor. That investor can buy that debt and charge you 18% a year, or whatever the interest rate is, the maximum interest rate is today for it, for that debt for as long as they want to, or they can choose to foreclose on the home right away because they own that debt. If you don't pay that debt, they demand payment, and you don't pay it, they can foreclose right away. It takes the city completely off the hook, and they get some of their tax money back. They sell them at discounts. So, you know, using that logic, if you're an investor, Ed, and you buy my house taxes, my tax liens, let's say I owe $1,000 on liens, and you've got a house here that you like, and let's say it's a $100,000 home, you know, do you foreclose or don't you? Well, if I own the home outright, there's no mortgage on it, that investor is probably going to foreclose. Because that's $100,000 he's going to get back on a $1,000 investment. So if he's got to spend $5,000 or $6,000 kicking your butt out and taking the house because you didn't pay your taxes, so what? But if you owe $100,000 on that home, chances are he doesn't want to do that, so he's looking for that 18% interest money for as long as he can get it, and until he finally has to make a decision on what to do. So what the banks are doing here, but the reality is that's how the investments work when they buy the tax liens. But what about the ones that they don't buy the tax liens? These tax liens build up. Anytime your house is foreclosed on, the bank doesn't have first right to anything if there's taxes owed. The government has first right to everything. So if there's taxes owed on a house that's foreclosed on, and that house gets foreclosed on, those taxes have to be paid before the bank gets paid. You see what I'm saying? So in this case,
yeah,
the city has the right to foreclose for tax liens, but they sell that right off when they sell the tax liens because they would rather have the money than to go through the hassle. Well, what would happen? We have hundreds of properties in Louisville that are run down like this, the taxes are owed on, that isn't being taken care of by the mortgage companies, and when you send them a bill for the grass cutting services and everything, they just laugh and don't pay it because most of these people are out-of-town investors, out-of-town mortgage companies. They don't live here in the neighborhood, and there's really not much you can do because of all the state laws and all the intercommerce, everything crap you got to go through. So why don't the city just say, you know what? We've got all these attorneys on our staff. Now, I understand we got to deal with crime and a county attorney and all that crap. But we've got all this stuff going on here. Screw it. Let's hire an outside legal firm, because they do that anyway. They've got these guys in their hip pocket, Frost, Brown, Todd, all these other ones, Stoll, Ogden, Keenan, you know, David Tandy's little group. You got all these different people out there that they pay megabucks to represent them. Make a deal with them. You get 10% of the proceeds on anything we collect. Go after this. Foreclose on these mortgage companies. Force them to spend their money. And you do it on a daggone contingency basis where you're getting 10 or 15% of the net. Why not? We're going to be better off, aren't we?
Yeah, now the big firms that you mentioned probably couldn't do it because they probably represent some banks too. But, I'm sure there's no doubt of young, aggressive attorneys, they'd be more than happy just to start firing off the paperwork, helter-skelter, you know, so at the very least, just like a workman's comp fraud or something like that, they just keep sending off paperwork, and it costs a fortune just to answer them. So sooner or later, somebody's going to budge. Somebody's going to say, okay, banks are going to say, okay, enough already. What do you give us for the house?
If you get an elected official,
I think politicians, if they weren't so beholden to the banks, I think we should rewrite some laws out there, and putting a little bit more clamp down on absentee property owners, you know, be they banks or out of state people or whomever. I think they ought to put up some pretty stiff parameters. You have to upkeep your property, and the threshold for legal action needs to be maybe a little bit lower.
Right. And see, that's the whole thing. Now, this was last week they announced this. I think the plan is great, but it requires a politician who has some balls to do the right thing, and that's hold these big banks' money accountable. And the reality is they shouldn't even be in this position because, if you remember, you know, Barack Obama touted this HAMP, you know, the home improvement mortgage process, or whatever the hell it was, a home affordable mortgage process.
Oh, yeah.
But this whole HAMP program was supposed to take care of all this underwater stuff, help these people in foreclosure and those behind on a mortgage and everything else. It was supposed to fix all of these problems that the banks themselves created, all right? And we gave millions and millions and billions of dollars to make this HAMP program work, and it's only been used and helped less than 5% of the people who are eligible. After all these years, this was Barack Obama's plan, man. He promised the whole world this was great, and he even used that as a success story during his 2012 election. And it turned out to be yet another lie. But the banks aren't going to willingly. They got the billions of dollars to do this, but they're not going to do anything about it. They got the money in their accounts showing them up. They don't care about what's going on with the rest of this. And the federal government has already proven that they're not going to do anything to the banks. I mean, they're too big to fail. Just ask Eric Holder. You know, so Wall Street's pretty pissed about this. They're vowing to sue Richmond, California. Didn't stop them at all. They still did it. But you still have other California cities that are looking at it, but now they're kind of backing away from it to wait and see what happens with Richmond, California. Then we've got the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the FHFA. They basically threatened all these municipalities like Richmond from using eminent domain. The federal agency said it was going to direct Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to limit, restrict, or cease business activities in any town that uses eminent domain to seize mortgages. So for the fact that Richmond, California decided to do this, Now, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the FHFA, is telling Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae that they are no longer allowed to do business in Richmond, California. So you can't qualify for a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac loan or anything else, which is nothing more than a government-backed loan, folks, because you don't have a problem going after the banks to hold them accountable. How pathetic is that? How does a federal...
It's bad enough that Eric Holder has pretty much just stood up and said, oh, the banks are too big to fail. I'm a wuss. I'm not going after them. But they take it to a whole new level where they're saying, we're not just not only going after them, we're going to protect their interests above local governments, state governments. We're going to protect their interests above and beyond the neighbors or the individuals. It's like, we refer to it as the political class and the corporate class. They're protecting the banksters, as I like to call them. They're not just not prosecuting. They're protecting them. They're advocating for them. While let's just be honest, while the houses are rotting and turning into mold traps and disease and bug-ridden, rat-infested, crackhead-using shelters. The roof and four walls probably got half the windows busted out. And on top of that, they're letting them keep them on the books at full face value and lie about the value. This government's pathetic. It really is when it comes to that kind of stuff.
It is. It's downright awful.
I mean, I don't give a damn if you got a Democrat in the White House or not, or if Eric Holder's a Democrat and they're supposed to be for the little guys. The hell with that. They're not only giving them a free pass, they're doing their dirty work for them, too.
Well, that's very true. And, when you look at this, and what people have to really understand, too, and here's something a lot of people need to really know about when you talk about mortgages, okay? When you purchase a mortgage, let's say you go to your local bank. Let's use Forge Bank. That's my personal bank. You go to Forge Bank, and they make a home loan to you. What ultimately happens is they end up selling that home loan to some investors. These are called mortgage-backed security investors. They bundle up a bunch of loans, let's say they total $1 million, and they sell them to this investment group, and this investment group, they trade on Wall Street and everything else. Well, at that time, they no longer have a mortgage or a deed, folks. They have what's called a stock certificate. It's a security. It's traded on the open market. There are some success stories already going on around the country that mainstream media isn't telling you about. Maybe we need to devote a show to it. But there are some success stories going on around the country right now that are proving that once this mortgage becomes a security, the mortgage itself is irrelevant. In order for these people to foreclose or anything else, every stockholder has to agree to a foreclosure. If one doesn't, there is no foreclosure. They can't do it. So this is some of the things that are going on. And, what's really interesting is, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guarantee the financing for about 90% of all mortgages issued in the United States. You heard me right, folks, 90%. So, if Fannie Mae and Freddie have got the right to tell a city they're no longer going to lend there because they don't agree with them holding the banks accountable, and every city in the U.S. did that, essentially nobody would be able to buy a house anywhere. But if you're in one of those cities that have just been cut up by Fannie and Freddie, you're not going to buy a house anyway. So your real estate market just went completely gone. Let's go to the phones real quick. Yeah, we got a quick phone call. I think this might be Mayo. Is this Mayo?
Yeah, it is, Ed.
Real quick, sir. You're running on the end of the line. Go ahead.
All right. One of the things, like you said, the good idea. I don't know if you remember this or not. It would have been, somewhere between 89, 92 maybe. Guy had bought a property. I can't remember if there was a hotel motel on it. Some of the, people, homeless that was there, the guy I talked to him, some were ex-vets. He said, hey, you help me fix it up, I'll pay you. You get a room. And people started working there. Word got out, disabled veterans or homeless veterans. They fixed it up. They got to use his at that address as an address and started getting their benefits. Because for whatever reason, the U.S. Postal Service recognizes a P.O. box as a permanent address, but the Veterans Administration does not recognize a post office box as a permanent address. So a lot of these guys had benefits coming but couldn't get them, and he probably did this for, I don't know, year and a half or so, had, you know, some rules in place there, you know, no drugs, no excess drinking, et cetera.
Right.
You know, helped a lot of these guys out, and some do-gooder, you know, or somebody who thought they were doing good, said, oh, well, you can't do that. You're getting free labor. No, he was paying them, and, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so then it got taken away from him, and all these people that he had helped put back on the streets and lost their benefits. And
Well, I haven't actually looked into that story. I read a brief piece on that a while back. I really wasn't focused on that issue at the time. But, you know, the only thing I could tell you is it would probably coincided with Barack Obama, you know, actually getting credit for helping a vet when really all he really wants to do is put more people on food stamps. So that was money that he couldn't give to the illegal immigrants to go out and buy our food on our tax time, you know. It is pathetic. And, you know, if the guy wasn't even paying them cash, you know, the reality is they were working, so it was barter system. I mean, that's what it was.
Sweat equity.
Yeah, you hammer these 2x4s into this wall, I'll give you a free room in exchange. Well, that's a barter system. Welcome to America. That's supposed to be the way it is. You know, but no, I haven't looked at that story, but we might need to because we need to move on to a few of these stories because it's getting kind of disturbing. But what really makes this, and I need to wrap it up with this because we're at the end of the hour. What really makes it up, thanks for the call, Mayo, by the way. What really makes this interesting, though, is everybody knows how eminent domain works when it comes to seizing property. Eminent domain by municipalities is nothing new. We've done it in Louisville so many times to expand the airport, for example. It's nothing new. What is a new approach is actually seizing the mortgages that the property sits on. That's where it's going to get interesting. So I'm really waiting to see how the courts rule on this.
Or as it goes, condemning or fining them for health and building code violations.
Well, that's it. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, I'm kind of curious.
They would do it to you and I. But really, the most disturbing part is like I said, is here we have, you know, Democrats for the people, Holder and Obama and everybody else. And they're not only not prosecuting, which is nauseating enough, now they're protecting them, and when they, you know, and when I say, you're right, it completely shuts down. If somebody tries to take control of the situation in their local government, they are being shut down by a lethal combination of the government and the banksters. I mean, if there's any doubt who's running it, before you read it or research an article like this, this should pretty much it's pretty obvious. Like the government saying, okay, look, if you do the bank wrong, you know, you do our boys wrong over here, we're going to do you wrong. And now the banks aren't going to own any money, and the FHA and HUD or nobody, we're not going to back anything up. There are, you know, the only chance you've got is to go to the mob and borrow money to buy a house. Because if you can't go straight to a bank and you can't go through some sort of government underwritten loan, like say the banks, no way in hell they're going to loan any mortgages in a town like that, they're pissed at them. So, you know, like I say, local government, now local government. I'm glad to see a local government bringing this to a head because now it's not just some individual. It's some local government, and hopefully somebody's ballsy enough in that local government to say, wait a minute. You know, we're just trying to do some urban renewal. We're trying to help some people out here. Property is turning into a mold, you know, a mold incubator, and we're just trying to straighten the houses out. Save a neighborhood, and they're telling us we've got to take on the feds and Wall Street. I just hope somebody just rears up and just gets on all the TV shows and says, bite me.
Well, I'm totally with you there, man. And just to wrap it up real quick, I mean, ultimately it comes down to why not? You know, if you live in a neighborhood where you've got all these houses boarded up and everything else, and, you know, you've got rats, you've got all kinds of feces, if you will, it's an environmental hazard. It's a health hazard. You've got the drug criminals going in and stealing all the copper pipes, the air conditioner units, and everything else. These houses are uninhabitable anyway. You know, so these are for the abandoned houses. Now, for those who are underwater, who are on the verge of foreclosure, because these mortgage companies, you know, they owe more on the house than it's worth, then all you're doing is looking at a house that's going to end up the same way very soon. So if you can save the ones that exist for these people that are underwater and things like that, that are getting behind, that are going to be in foreclosure very soon, and keep those houses from becoming vacant and torn apart and destroying the neighborhood further, I see no problem with it. And the mortgage companies should be willing to do something like that. It's going to save them. Because at the end of the day, one of these municipalities is going to go after all the people that own these mortgages in court, and they're going to win billions of dollars, millions of dollars, at least. So they're going to end up costing them more money in the long run. Why put up the headache? Because the reality is these type of situations only affect about 10% of the housing market itself. So they may as well go ahead and clean that 10% up by giving the cities, taking the burden off of themselves, let the cities take the hump. And here's the kicker. If you can go into a house that's at $100,000 original mortgage, it's underwater, it's going into foreclosure, it's going to be abandoned, it costs even more down the road before it gets raised, and the city can buy that for $80,000 and offer it back to the homeowner at, let's say, a 3 to 5% interest rate, which is a very, very reasonable rate, you know, so the mortgage, these people are going to be able to keep their houses by saving just a little bit on the mortgage. And what about that interest? What if you took that interest and made this complete, pure nonprofit? And I don't mean nonprofit in the sense that you tie up all these profits into people overseeing the program so that you can eat up 95% of what you take in and put 5% back and act like you're doing something to help somebody. No, let's do a real nonprofit here. No more than 15% or 20% can go to overhead. That means wages and salaries of people to run it, folks. But you take the rest of that money and you reinvest that into some of these abandoned properties, part of the homestead improvement stuff, if you will. You combine that with existing federal dollars that you already have, and you might be able to clean up these neighborhoods fairly quickly. And you'll be able to do it without having to take any more taxpayer money. Wow, what
yeah.
a concept.
Well, I tell you, when it comes to this town, I hope they're successful. And, I think condemn the houses, use eminent domain, whatever. And then you know what? If they get them and they've got an unfulfilled tax lien and the banks won't do any financing and Freddie or Fannie or FHA or nobody else will do any financing, you know what? If the cities cease to just sell the houses to cash, to people that have cash, you know, you want a $100,000 house? You know, look at the banks and go, yeah, watch this. And so you want a $100,000 house? We'll sell it to you for $10,000 cash. It's yours.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
If I lived in an adjacent city, I'd be looking at that.
Well, there we go. You can buy houses up in Detroit for a dollar right now. So go on up there, man. We talked about that. All right, that's it for tonight. Mr. Martin, I guess you get the rest of the week off. So we will see you on Monday. All right, man. You have a good one, sir. And for the rest of you guys, thank you, sir. Dale the Truth will be here tomorrow night with me, of course, at 7 o'clock, like always on Wednesday. And don't forget Thursday night, the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show with Dale. And our good friend Ken Moman on Sunday night at Liberty Unbridled. Check out LouisvillePolitics.com. You can listen to everything right there on our website. Or you can listen to us on Stitcher and iTunes as well. So we are everywhere. There's no reason not to hear our shows. There's no reason not to get involved. And by the way, while you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, join our RSS feed, our email newsletter, and you'll get everything sent right to your inbox. And click on a sponsor or two. These guys, every time you click on that, we get paid a little something, and it helps us pay for the show and keep everything rolling. That's it for tonight, folks. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow night. Enjoy the rest of your evening.